Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We've got a great guest for the show today, Thanos Diokakis. He has a very extensive and deep engineering background. He's been a VP of engineering, a CTO a bunch of times, a fractional CTO, a technical co-founder. And today he is software and engineering effectiveness coach and technical leader at Cosmic Teacups. Thanos, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Anything laid that out there, your introduction, is there anything else you'd like the audience to understand about you professionally?
I think I might want to say one sentence about what a software engineering effectiveness coach is, because that's not a usual thing.
That might help. Let's go with that.
Yeah. So what I do is I help companies that struggle with software delivery, that is shipping features out the door, to get better at that. And sometimes it is companies that are really struggling with it, and sometimes companies that are doing great, but want to do even better and get more software at the door at better quality.
Okay, great. So let's steep ourselves into that problem, right? Because there's the regular problem of, hey, I need software developers, or I need a good team versus whatever, or I need someone to help me figure out what the technical stuff is. But what are the pain points and the problems that people are dealing with today without this software engineer effectiveness coach?
Yeah, I think typically people are dealing with the pain points that you mentioned in the way that you mentioned them, not realizing that shouldn't be their pain point. So you think about, should I hire this person? Should my architecture be this? What should I do about that? But really your pain point is you need to ship features to your customers, because that's how you realize value. So you're not really rewarded for doing stuff. These are input metrics or activities. No one really cares. What matters really is, are features going out the door? And what people should care about is exactly that, right? You make money by shipping stuff to your users and getting cash for it. That's sort of the very basic of the business. So I tend to start from that and kind of work backwards from there, from what do we need to do with any particular situation to fix that issue?
Yeah, one of the things that jumps... Yeah, that makes sense. So one of the things that jumps into my mind as you describe that is my experiences of when I've worked with startups and seeing how the software developers operate in that kind of operation, versus when things grow and things get big and the nature of the work is different and you don't have the same level of efficiency are the problems that you're solving largely dealing in that category, or is it also the startup world?
I tend to focus on smaller teams. I think that's usually when you can see a bit more of returns for your investment, and it's easy to say, hey, we know we have these problems and let's go and fix them, and we can jump in and just do it. When you get past the 15 to 20 engineers point, now you may have multiple teams. And that is another fun, challenging thing. And I've done this before in my career, but it's not what I'm focusing on right now. The problems there become a bit more people problems than technical problems. It's like, how do we organize these teams? How do we get by? And how do we do these sort of things? They're similar and they're overlapping, but it's a bit more challenging in some ways, because you're dealing with different communication structures and so on.
Let's dive into some stories or examples about a problem that a company might have. So you've got a software development team, and maybe they're not efficient in the scrums. They're not staying on top of things. So you dive in.
Yeah. So here's the most common thing that I see is, we started doing feature X, and feature X was going to take a couple of weeks, and it took a month, and then it wasn't what we wanted. And then it took another month, and that still wasn't what we wanted. So 6 months later, now everyone is super frustrated. Things are not happening. Business, the owners, management is like not super happy. The engineers are frustrated. It's not what you told us. You keep changing requirements. And what usually I see from that is, okay, that gets shipped. Like, it wasn't like a good experience. And what we're going to do next time, we're going to write tighter specs. We're going to try and write everything down from the beginning and make a really tight plan and make sure we know exactly what's going to happen and when you're trying to tighten the screws. And that is, it's unintuitive, but that is usually not the right solution, right? Because what we see happen with that is you cannot predict what's going to happen. Like, most software that we write is really bespoke and really custom, and no one knows what it's going to do. So instead of trying to like just force your way into doing everything in advance and shooting for planning and predictability from day one, what I like to do and I like to advise clients is to form these structures that form for quick learning and quick collaboration. So instead of trying to put something out there and write everything in advance, is do we have the right structure for the teams that when questions comes up, we can answer them quickly? When we said what we're going to ship, did you know the management, the boss, the product managers throw it over a wall and say, and I'll come back and look in a month and see what you have? Or were they engaged in that process, looking at it day in, day out, and making sure that is happening? So instead of having these planning and predictability, we try to go for execution. Can we learn how to execute real quickly, learn from mistakes, and keep improving that machine rather than doing these really tight specs?
So that seems like a big issue too, is learning the wrong lesson, right? So a company can go through whatever situation they've been through, things didn't work out right. And then instead of fixing it the right way, they say, I know what we need to do. We need to go waterfall and we need to have this heavy documentation phase of our projects. So then is that where you come in, is that you've got the expertise and experience to look at those scenarios and say, you know what, let's go in this direction for the solution instead.
Yeah. So I usually approach this. First, we have to start changing our thinking. And I have these 7 mental models that I've been pitching to everyone that will listen to me and saying, hey, let's start thinking about software development a little bit differently. Because we do a lot of things, like someone graduated out of college, they learn how to code and they learn how to algorithms and things of that nature. And they go to their first job and we do Scrum and Agile and we do it this way. And they learn that and then they apply it to their next job. And no one has ever really studied, people have studied this, but in general, people that work in big companies or even smaller startups, they're not the experts in how to deliver software, right? So no one really thinks about these things and they just go ahead and do whatever they've seen done. And sometimes the solutions are counterintuitive, right? So don't go write tight specs, but make these collaboration structures in there. So I try to get people to start thinking about this differently, think about these different mental models of how to gather your thoughts on software. And then there's different solutions. You can't make a checklist, right? And say, just do these things. That's really hard. So I try to give people the concepts and then they can apply different solutions inside sort of these base principles. Now, that can still be a little bit wishy-washy. And I've tried to ground this a little bit better. And then I suggest that people go in 4 phases. And first phase is iterations. So start thinking about how you can get iterations into production fairly quickly. If you can't iterate into production, nothing really is going to happen. Once you get iterations going, that's part number one. And number two is quality in production. Do you understand how your production works, whatever that is, an app or is it a website? And do you know how what everything is running, what the errors are? And do you have the right processes in place so you can ship quickly, but also do it with high quality? And those two go together, because once you start shipping quickly, then you have to have the quality to match up pretty quickly. So you can do a little iteration, a little quality, and go back and forth. You get these two nailed down, the third thing happens is complexity starts building up. Now your architecture can be quite messy, you may need to go do some refactorings. So step 3 here is go fight complexity and make sure everything is pretty straightforward, because us humans have like lizard brains and we think we're really smart, but at the end of the day, there's only so much we can handle. So I try to keep things as dumb as possible. And this can straddle like technology, can straddle culture, can straddle process, it's everywhere. And then when we have iterations, we got quality down, we got complexity tamed, then we go look into planning and predictability. So now we have like enough building blocks strung together and we can make plans for what we can do in 3 months or 6 months or 1 year. Because a lot of times people say, they don't have the ability to execute, but they try to reach for planning and predictability way before their ability to execute and they stumble on that because they can't really predict what happens. So I try to linearize it in these 4 steps and makes it have some kind of plan where you can work through in a meaningful way.
So you've got iterations, production, and the quality around that because you're speeding up. So now you have to make sure you're not putting out garbage. And then things are naturally getting way more complex. So you've got to find ways of systematically staying on top of that. And then now when you've got that machine running, you could take a step back and you can plan and you can look at the predictability. You can model things better, know how many hours in you're getting things done and things like that. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's really accurate. And I really don't like story points and anything of that nature. I don't know if you've seen there's some cards you can buy, which is how long this is going to take. And it's small or it's like it's going to be 1 hour or 1 day or I have no idea. It's just a very simple model there.
What's the best way to deal with it? Since you brought that up, because you've been on all kinds of different development teams, you know, there's the story points, then there's the Fibonacci stuff, and then there's the t-shirt size. Are they all similar? How do you compare and contrast those in your experience? Are they just...
Here's what I would say. So pick your favorite one and then try it. And then when you're done after a few cycles, go back and see how close you were. And if you're close and if it's working well to predict what you're trying to do, then fantastic. You've probably reached the maturity level where you can predict pretty well and keep doing it. But if you're finding out that it's like junk in, junk out, then maybe stop doing it until you can predict it better. It doesn't really matter, is my point. I think when you have a team that is beginning to fire on all cylinders, you start beginning to get a pretty intuitive feel of what you can achieve by when. You've gotten pretty good at breaking things into small pieces. I think people want predictability when things are really slow, and now I need to let you tell me exactly when things are going to be because I'm stressing out. If you have a really good working team, and I've seen this with teams where the team is can chunk hugely complex pieces of functionality. I have one client that's like this. We've been working over the past couple of years, and they made 5% incremental progress or 2% every week on week. Do that for a year. Now you are a machine. Like these guys are like taking the competition's lunch. And management isn't really stressed out about the plan because they know we want something, something pops up. We can have it in a few days or a few weeks. So that planning and predictability, they have an intuitive feel of what they can get done over the next 6-9 months or whatever. And they need to go down to story points. Here's the pile of work. Just pick something off the pile, get it done, and everyone's happy because things are getting done quickly.
So it's more about the team chemistry than the exact method of how you do their story pointing. It's, does the team communicate internally well, and do they carve up? That sounds like a big piece. Are they good at carving up huge things into discernible modules and then knocking those out so you could complete your 2%, 3% per sprint and get to the
end? I think there's two interesting things that we can pull on here, right? One is what you said, which is, I don't know if you've seen this little meme that goes around that is showing like a wheel and another wheel and an axle and a frame, and then eventually turns into a car, right? That's not the right kind of slices. The right slices is it's a scooter and then it's a bicycle. And then so when the team gets really good at doing that, I think that is a skill that is super, super valuable because they can produce value to the business incrementally. And then when that happens, I think the second is psychological. It is people stress out, right? People have clients, they want to go sell things, and they stress out when they don't know that they're going to get what they need and the client's going to be unhappy or we're going to lose the deal and it's going to be existential for the company because that was a really big deal. So when that chemistry begins to appear because the team is now performing well, that stress just dissolves, right? We know we can do this stuff, right? We've done this. We've spent a year improving our processes and now we can ship to production whenever we want and we can ship complicated features. And you can see like the dynamic really changes. Like the example of the customer that I was mentioning before, you can like you go and work with this team and it's everyone's so much happier and productive and you don't have this burnout and stress that you see in a lot of software teams. And that's one of the things that really motivates me, right? I want to see the joy and of the craft of writing software again, because I think we've taken like some dark turn over the last 10 or 20 years that it shouldn't be this way.
Yeah, it really should be a happy thing. The excitement of trying to get something to work, trying and failing. Then you finally get it to succeed. And the magic of, wow, this works. We built this feature. Let's talk about the way you engage with your clients. You come in and do a diagnostic of the way the company is executing and observe for a while and then come in with a plan. How do you engage with folks?
Yeah, I really like to get hands-on. So I will attend in maybe the first few weeks, attend various company meetings, like their scrums or whatever planning meetings they're having, and just get a feel. Because sometimes what people will tell you and what you observe is quite different. And I've done this for long enough that you can pretty easily just go pick the subtle hints of what's happening in there and see it. And a lot of the technical problems often boil to people issues and interactions. So it's always fun to look at that and go and apply myself places. I usually then go write a bunch of observations and hey, look, this is the sort of things that I'm seeing. This is the order that I think we probably should approach them in that gives you the best bang for your buck. I don't like going in and saying, we're going to redo everything from scratch. I usually like to be pretty surgical and say, we're going to tweak a few things at a time to see what's working and what's not. So we come up with a plan and the team goes and executes on this plan and I'm available. I will often go in and maybe write some code with the team. I want to see how things work and get firsthand opportunity to see what's broken and not. Again, sometimes what you hear isn't exactly what happens. I worked with one client and I checked out the code base and everything had red squiggly lines underneath it. I said, whoa, that's weird. Hey guys, something's not working with my IDE. I've got like type errors everywhere. No, that's how it is. Whoa. that's not how it should be. We got to go fix this first. And we fixed it, and things are like so much nicer. So it's really nice to get hands-on. And then I advise the team as we see the results of what to do next, and maybe we reorder the list that we have. Sometimes the team will be stuck with a particular kind of problem, so we can jump hands-on and help. Or if I cannot help myself, I can usually connect them with someone that knows the specific area and get them help. And we're really focusing on seeing these results. We want to see the team go where they bring down cycle time, and instead of taking like weeks or months to ship things, it now is down to days, and they can go from having shipping like few things and far apart to like really increasing by 200, 300, 400% their output there.
Now, in terms of the scope of your work, do you get involved with the team portion of bringing on new team members or saying, hey, let's hire some 3 FTEs for this or have this consultancy come in and knock this thing out? Do you orchestrate the people? I think a lot of it sounds like fixing the people processes that are existing, but then in terms of orchestrating who is actually there.
Yeah, I often get involved with that as well. I think a lot of clients that I have that are less mature companies, that maybe smaller outfits, they don't know where to hire, who to hire, how to hire. So I'll advise them and saying, hey, okay, like you probably want to get, you have a back-end guy and a front-end guy, and they're always like at odds. So maybe you got to hire a full stack engineer because that process will go a lot faster. I was working with a client recently that was very front-end heavy, didn't have anyone in the back-end. So help them find and hire someone in the right area. Being around the blocks, I know where to reach the people and how to find and work with different outsourcing companies and recruiters and all that stuff. So I will basically go in and help with anything that is needed. And often when I don't know, I usually know who does. So I'll jump in and bring that expertise into the clients. And that's usually pretty valuable because a lot of times people that have had, maybe they're starting their first company and they've been 4 or 5 years out of college, they're not fully connected and know where to find all those things. So there's a lot of value add there in just making these connections for them.
Yeah. And I imagine from a sprint, it sounds like you're helping people do way better agile and with kind of the iteration and stuff like that. And I see you smiling, so you possibly disagree with that. And it seems retrospectives would be one of the real rubber meets the road places where we say we're naturally in that setting saying, here's what we did last time. Here's what's not working and is working. Let's do this time.
Yeah, and I was smiling because I imagine when people say agile, they mean it with a capital A. And when I say agile, I mean it with a small a. And the reason I say this is I think Agile 20 years ago, when we started doing Agile, that was like an earth-shattering thing. That was great because we were shipping every 6 months. And now it's like shipping every month. That's freaking fantastic. I'm the best thing ever. But I think as we've applied Agile, Agile may have gotten a little twisted. And now it's maybe a series of small waterfalls. So I think I like to explain people, look, understand where Agile came from. What is the history of this? Why do we do this? What are the good things of Agile? What are the bad things of Agile? Do we need a 2 hour or 4 hour? I've seen a 6 hour Monday morning sprint planning meeting. No, we don't. Here's a pile. What's the most important thing? Pick up the pile, do it. So there's some ceremonies that I'd like to get rid of. Now, if they're serving a purpose and the team is working well with it, fantastic. You get to keep it. No problem there. But there's other things such as retrospectives that you mentioned. Those are hugely valuable. Do we want to do them like every 2 weeks or every month? Because we can haggle if we have some piece of feedback that came in that we can deal with right now. Let's do it. We don't need to wait for the retrospective. So there's other aspects that are super valuable in closing the feedback loops that I love to keep. Having an hour of Scrum meeting every morning, maybe not. I tend to advise people to more to have the Kanban model where you can limit work in process. You have only so many things you're working on, so you can focus on shipping, not starting things, and then picking things off there and keeping some of the agile things in there. But yeah, no waterfalls.
Or Scrum fall. So it sounds like because in a world and in a time period where everything is such of a template and everything is just a predetermined solution that's given to us, and we're worked ourselves into this world where we think that a solution is just this cookie cutter thing, you're coming in with your human intelligence and you are applying bespoke solutions. It sounds like not every team that you work with gets the exact same. It doesn't look the same with every team. It's going to look different depending on where that team was when you started with them and what are their goals.
Yeah, my joke is that there's maybe like, I don't know, 40 or 50 sort of best practices, that generally things that everyone ought to be doing. And most teams that I work with implement only about half, but no two teams implement the same half. Like it's just scattered everywhere. So yeah, my goal is to bring them the mental models and have them think differently about software development. And then from that, they can assess their capabilities. We can assess jointly their capabilities and figure out what are the capabilities that would need to be productive. And like you said, it's not always the same. It's very different. It is pretty custom. And that's where teams struggle, right? Because if you give them like, here's like just all the things you should be doing. It's like, where do I start? What do I do? And they often me spotting some things in there and going, okay, this probably looks like a good avenue for you to pick, what you think, helps guide them through the right path and get the right priorities in there.
Is there, who should reach out to you for folks listening and thinking, yeah, I could use someone who is expert in those areas. Is there any organization that's too big, too small? Is there a sweet spot there? Is it more based upon goals?
Yeah. So generally I would say you need to have some engineers, even if that's a solopreneur and they're the one person, but they need to get more output from the limited resources that is themselves. That is the smallest unit. If you have an idea and no team yet, that's probably too soon. Typically the teams that I work with, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 is on the bigger side. I will work with larger teams as well, but I set kind of two rules. You must be motivated to do some change. So if you're like one team that has 10 or 15 people in a bigger company and you know the change that you want and you want to do it, you just need some help with it, I will work with these teams. So you need to have that motivation. And you also need to have the ability to make those changes, right? If you're going to be constrained by the rest of your org and you will have ideas, but we won't be able to implement them, that's probably not going to be a good fit. So if you know you have a problem and you're willing to try different things to make it happen, I probably can help you get a fair amount of output out of there.
Nice. We've been speaking, ladies and gentlemen, with Thanos Diokakis and at Cosmic Teacups. Thanos, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a fun conversation. I enjoyed it very much, Thomas.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.